What is up, No Nation? It's the guys from Plant the Spear back with you for another episode. Michael, we got a couple of different things to talk about. We got some lawsuit updates. Bet you it's not the lawsuit you're probably thinking of, but it is good for FSU at the same time. And then we got some top 25 power rankings come out. Are they fair? Are they foul? I don't know, man. I think it's okay. We won't mention who released it. It's a, you know, unnamed four-letter network.
Unnamed.
Then we're going to get into some round ball sports as well. So it's going to be a fully loaded episode that I'm excited to talk about. I think it's going to be a fun one for you guys. Of course, as always, Michael, thank you for joining me. And how are you, my friend?
Yeah, Jesse, thanks for having me, man. Yeah, I feel like we got a jam-packed episode. Just some stuff about FSU, some stuff about college football in general, some stuff about just other sports. So, man, let's jump right into it.
Yeah, it's crazy how the summer news cycle works. It feels like it's just dry as a bone, nothing. Then all of a sudden, it's like the news cycle pukes on you. And it's like, there's just so much stuff to talk about. So it just
happens.
Speaking of lawsuits, let's jump into the not Florida State versus ACC lawsuit that's making headlines. It is the fact that Jaden Rashada recently transferred to Georgia to become their quarterback, is suing Billy Napier, a Florida booster, and a former staffer. And man, this is... This is really a mixed bag, man, because at first you're like, okay, this is probably going to tank their program because this thing stinks to high heaven. There is literally like so many recruiting violations in this that you could, I mean, I don't know that you can give them the death penalty, but you know, you could probably put them on life support a little bit there.
That's right.
But the NCAA has decided we're just not going to punish anything, you know, after the court's ruling with the Tennessee and the Virginia case. So it's crazy that they're pretty much going to get to sidestep this whole thing. But again, man, obviously from the money perspective, it could hurt Florida and the coaches and the people named in the lawsuit. But I really think from just a prospect and trust perspective, you know, when he left, when he signed with Arizona State, there was for what they said anyway, there was no NIL deal there.
Right.
He said it was more about being around a staff that you could trust.
Right.
And that was not Florida. And so, you know, I also think this is a great rivalry move. He asked Kirby Smart if he could follow through with it. And Kirby's like, oh, of course you can.
Of course he did.
I know a lawyer. So, like, he probably helped him out with that. So it's great. So just to set the scene, here's pretty much what happened. So he was fraudulently induced. This is what he's claiming, that Florida fraudulently induced him to come to UF. Mm-hmm. Now, that's probably one heck of a recruiting violation right there because NIL is
already
not supposed to be for inducements.
Correct.
With a deal they could not follow through with. Now, first off, I'm sure most of you guys who are watching this remember the most ridiculous NIL deal in the history of NIL. $13.85 million
deal. Absolutely asinine.
Just ridiculous. Like, I think I have some eligibility left.
Thank you, right?
I mean, come on. I'll take $0.85 million. What do we got to do here? But the problem was with them doing this fraudulent deal, they actually lured him out of a rumored, because they've denied it since, a $9.5 million deal with Miami. So I think this brings up a couple of things here. First off, man, thank goodness for the Battle's End. First off,
we're not
paying $9.5 million for nobody. I mean, you know, we trust Mike Novell to go out and find a guy like Luke Cromanhawk, who was a zero-star backup at the time and is now a five-star who's on campus. I'm sure I owe money anyway, but it ain't 13.5 or $9.5 million. Now, John Ruiz denied that was a thing. They said they did not offer him $9.5 million. But if you know, you can believe John Ruiz, probably about as far as you can throw him.
Correct.
So I think what's interesting too is there were some other things where they apparently promised his dad a job in security, and they also had the booster had direct contact during a recruiting trip. There's another violation.
Another violation.
And one day. One single day after a $500,000 signing bonus was supposed to be paid, they sent him a termination letter for the deal. From the collective. That's a bad look. Now, I do have to say that these were the old Florida collectives. There was one of them that was working with involved in this deal where the head guy went crazy and got like drunk on a space and was talking smack about all kinds of people. And then this happened and that collective pretty much went away. That's how Florida Victorious basically came to life because of this disastrous deal. Now, Florida did agree to pay $150,000 for Rashada to pay Ruiz back for whatever dealings that they had. But really the smoking gun here, which again, probably won't even get punished. Billy Napier allegedly allegedly purposely, or I mean, personally guaranteed the deal and that Rashada would get $1 million to sign with UF. First off, that's, I mean, that's all over the, that's all over the, like, how are we getting punished when all this is happening? So,
I mean, all we did was drive a prospect and we got 3-game suspension. This dude's over here guaranteeing $1 million and NCAA is like, well, our hands are tied.
Right. Our O-line coach was an Uber driver and your head coach is a bag man. And we are the ones that get punished. It makes no sense. So like, man, it's going to be interesting to see if anything actually comes out of this. I highly doubt it. But at the same time, it's a bad look. And again, yeah. I know they have a new collective that's backing these things, but it just makes it look like there's dishonesty there.
Oh, yeah.
It also makes it look like, can you trust that they're going to pay you the money that they ask? Because this is something that we've seen in the NIL before world where, like, you know, you get promised a certain amount, and then when you show up, it's not what you get, and you're not happy with it. So, man, it's interesting. And I think it's also interesting that FSU recently petitioned to have a reduction in the penalties from the NCAA. And they cited this case in their letter to the NCAA, like, hey, man, look, this is preposterous that you would not punish them at all. Now, of course, Florida State's already served some of their suspensions and things like that. So that's too late now. But, man, what a mess they got going on in Gainesville right now.
Well, I mean, it's just,
this to not even land the guy.
Yes, I know. You didn't even get the guy. Now, Jesse, I have to make a confession. I was reading this whole story. Okay. I was reading this whole story one morning. I had maybe an hour and a half before I had to be at work. And so I was literally sitting in the Burger King parking lot reading this story, eating my, my French toast sticks because they're so good at Burger King. And literally reading, BK, if you want to sponsor us, please help us out.
Hey, you can have it your way on the show if you want.
You can always have it your way. But yeah, I was reading the story, and the thing that I just kept thinking about was this. Man, if I'm Florida, I am so ticked off because this is a black eye on recruitment. Yes. Because what kid is now going to hear you say, oh man, we're going to guarantee you $600,000, and they're going to be like, no, I want it in writing. I want it in a contract. I want it in writing. I want you to post it on social media. I want you to tell your grandma, your aunt, your uncle. I want them to sign the contract as well, too. I want your blood. Like, I mean, no kid is going to, in theory, trust any coaches, any promise, any inducement from the University of Florida now on with this coming out. Now, again, we're not legal experts. We're not saying this is all true. This is what we've read. This is what's being claimed in the lawsuit. But if any of it, if a smidge of this is true, which in fact makes sense because there's a reason why Florida did not deny the fact that they paid $100,000+ to break the contract from the University of Miami. Florida's not denying it.
Right.
I mean, they're not confirming it, but they're also not denying it. You'd think if it was categorically false, they'd come out and deny that. They haven't. Right. So that tells you something. Also tells you that if the NCAA were to be able to reinstate penalties for this, Miami's going to be in a lot of trouble as well, too. Like, this is not just implicating Florida. This also implicates the University of Miami as well, too, because Ruiz was a booster and he signed a contract. And, you know, I mean, there's so much to this, but more so for Florida, too. If the NCAA gets reinstated to be able to do investigations on this, dude, like you said, it may not be the death penalty, but they're definitely living in a hospice care. I mean, it's something.
Right. Right. And the thing is, like, they actually started investigating this because I remember when ours came out and everybody started poking fun at, oh, look at Florida State, you know, or whatever. Then they started investigating them for this, and it was like, oh, you laughed a little bit too soon there, buddy.
That's right.
But then the court happenings, you know, the rulings came out in Tennessee and Virginia, and they basically dropped the settlement. But I think, again, man, I think the biggest point from this is the fact that if it was one thing for, you know, this maybe speaks to a larger picture when you talk about collectives and the shady people that are involved in some of these, and honestly, from like a player perspective, you don't always have people who have your best interest going to bat for you.
Yep.
But it doesn't sound like Rashad and them, and of course we don't know the whole story, but it doesn't sound like he really did anything wrong. I mean, this $13 million deal was headlines when it happened.
Yep.
And so the fact that it doesn't appear that he did anything wrong, they just made a deal they could never hold up, which is the complaint in the lawsuit.
Yeah.
But had it been like a shady collective that was like, okay, well, that was a terrible group of people we had. We did away with them. We started Florida Victorious, all that stuff. You moved past it. The problem is you had your head coach go in there.
Your head coach.
And make put a his guarantee. Name on the line. Right. And so to me, it's like, again, it just comes down to how could you trust that staff? How could you trust any NIL deals they have? So, I mean, again, man, this isn't a Florida show, but it's extremely interesting to see this come out. And I really, you know, hopefully it helps us in recruiting.
Yeah.
Where some in-state kids are like, man, I don't know that I can trust them. I know that I can trust the guys in Tallahassee. The Battle's End is one of the best, most stand-up collectives that there is. And so hopefully it does help us a little bit. And then, like you said, if someday and someone frees the NCAA, you know, from the basement that they're hiding in, then hopefully this could bring about some sanctions. But hopefully, if nothing else, you know, kind of the ripple effect, it could at least get maybe some of our the punishments that we got reversed, and maybe get a few scholarships back or some of the fines or stuff like that.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say that because, and kudos to Florida State for recognizing this, of saying like, hey, hold on a second. We were the first ones. When you guys reached out to us, we over-volunteered information. We were incredibly cooperative. We told on ourselves. We didn't have to tell you this. You wouldn't have known. They like I've read stuff. They would have never known that that you know Alex Atkins and all of that had happened. But Florida State told on itself, and then to get punished, and then be like, "Well, we're not going to punish Tennessee. We're not going to punish Virginia, and we definitely can't punish Florida right now because we just don't have the law behind us." Yeah, you can't. You actually have. I would think ethically you would need to go back and retroactively unfreeze reduce the penalties for Florida State. And here's a key note about this: Florida State is not asking for the suspension of Alex Atkins to go away. They're actually saying no, leave that. That's fine. We're just saying the reduction of scholarships and the recruiting visit time and the on-campus visit. Like we need those to go away because it's not fair that we're being charged with this. And yet, here, look at all this. Look at all this stuff that's happening right there.
Right.
And we came to you and told you, and they're trying to hide it. And it's only because of this news report that it's even coming out. And then I will say this, too, and throw it back to you and get your thoughts on this, Jesse, is I don't think this is going to be the last time we ever see this. No. Yes, this is wild. Yes, this is unprecedented. I don't think this is going to be the last time. I think depending on the outcome of this case, we might see more and more student athletes rise up and say, yeah, you know what? I don't like this coach. And he promised me all this money and I didn't get it. And I actually have a paper trail to like track it. Yeah. We taking you to court to get that money. I mean,
I agree because I think this one steals the headlines because of who it was. It was a highly touted recruit. And then the amount of money, I mean, people just see that amount of money, which I mean, by the way, Florida, like, y'all can't even cheat successfully. What's going on in Gainesville?
Gosh.
But you're right. I think that maybe some kids don't feel they have the leverage or the bargaining chips. And if they see this go Rashada's way, then they may go, okay, yeah, that deal that you promised me that I didn't get either, or you know, whatever NIL mishaps they have, you may see them go to court to try and get theirs too. And by all means, if they're being done wrong, go for it. I mean, they deserve that. You shouldn't be making promises that you can't hold up. It just, again, man, it speaks to the wild world that is NIL and college sports. And I don't think it's entirely sustainable. And you know, a lot of that is going to get back to the money. And the next thing we're going to talk about, and that's the NCAA settlement that is in the works right now. And I know you have more information on it than I do. So I'm going to kick it to you in just a second to talk about it. But this is going to end up costing programs a lot of money. I mean, you have NIL back pay. You have, you know, the addition of being able to pay players now. And so to me, like you look at the interesting thing that came out with North Carolina recently when, you know, the ACC meetings and all this stuff has been a hot topic on our show and others about what's come out and are they going to sue the ACC? Are they going to try and get out? You know, they just came out and said that this year alone, they're operating at a $17 million deficit. And then you're looking at over the next 10 years, they're looking at running an athletic budget at $100 million deficit. That is not sustainable. They came out about a year ago when Florida State first really did the suing and all that stuff, and the ACC had some turmoil. They came out a few months ago and said that, like, look, we have some of the highest number of like non-football programs, Title IX stuff, Olympic sports, all those things. And we're not going to be, this is not sustainable. We are going to have to cut sports if the budget doesn't change, which is why you're seeing the AD and the Board of Trustees, they're arguing back and forth. One thinks they should be out of the ACC, one thinks they shouldn't. And, you know, it might end up costing somebody their job because this, it's just not sustainable. But the amount of money you're talking about, $25, $30 million a year potentially, I mean, you're talking about a really big dent in the budget. Now, granted, we don't know where this money's going to come from. Is that going to come from collectives, from, you know, fan things and things like that? But it, this also puts a exclamation point behind the revenue gap, which is another reason why we've always said that Florida State needs to get out. It's not about right now, because the revenue gap is not terrible right now. But in the future, it's going to continue to grow. And now it looks like your expenses to maintain a roster are going to get bigger. So, like, and I know you're going to tell us about it, but it sounds like this is like a, you can't opt out of this. You got to pay this. And so you're going to need the money. And so I think this heightens that. But man, it's going to really change college sports if this settlement goes through. And I'll let you tell us a little bit more about it.
Well, yeah. And you're absolutely right. This, we are on the precipice of a college athletic era of college athletics that we've never seen before. I mean, you have to go all the way back to like 2014 when that, if you remember that Ed O'Bannon case where the NCAA or the Supreme Court ruled that that the rules and bylaws of the NCAA were prohibiting trade and fair trade for college athletes, right? So they then, of course,
that killed NCAA.
That killed NCAA, but thank the Lord Jesus, it's coming back.
Coming back.
But so then, of course, a couple years ago, the Supreme Court voted 9-0.
That's a blowout.
Yeah, it was a blowout. It was not even close. The lights were on, but no one was home, right? Like, it was a blowout that you could not restrict college athletes from making money for what they do, for name, image, and likeness. And when you have, and I'll just say this, and I'm not a political person, but when you have two people, two justices who are on the extreme opposite sides of each other politically, Republican, Democrat, whatever you want to call it, and they both agree on this one thing, it's done. This is not going to change. 9-0. And so basically what ended up happening is once the NIL payment thing became a thing, well, all these PATH athletes were like, well, what about us? All that time we were there, we didn't get paid. So they got together, found some lawyers who were willing to try this case, and basically got this case all the way to where it needed to go, to where the NCAA at first laughed it off. But then the judge said, yeah, you're going to lose this case if you let it go all the way to court, because they're suing, Jesse. They are suing for $20 billion. $20 billion.
I take that back. I think I did use a couple years of eligibility in there. So, like, can I get into this lawsuit?
Like, I need to get into this.
So, you didn't see me on TV. I was the water boy, but I need my cut too.
Exactly. So basically, everything is indicating that the NCAA is going to lose this. So the NCAA being smart, saying, okay, let's try to get a settlement. So the settlement is actually going to be around $2.8 billion. So not the $20 billion that they were going to lose for, but around $2.8 billion. And so the way this is going to work out is that the NCAA is going to fund 41% of the damages, so about $1.1 billion. The rest of that is going to be on the schools to fund 60%, which is, you know, you could argue about who should get more, but that's $1.65 billion, okay? The way this is going to work is that the 27 non-power conferences, so outside of the ACC, Big Ten, Big 12, all that stuff, they're going to pay about $990 million towards this fund over a 10-year period. The power schools are going to pay $664 million towards these schools. Also, now that's just to pay back the former players. Also, part of this settlement is that this NCAA has agreed, and these conferences all have to agree. By the way, at the time of this podcast recording, the SEC and the Big Ten are the only two power conferences who have yet to agree, but speculation is they're going to agree to it because they have to. Right. Like, they have no choice. They're going to have to agree to this. But once they agree, the part of the agreement is that schools will now reserve $25 to $30 million for paying athletes, basically, okay? Which will then allow, and so the good out of this is that it's going to allow a salary cap, per se, okay? Right. That each school will be allowed to pay up to a certain amount for the athletes. The other side of it, though, is that, I mean, who are they going to pay? Because you have, what, 85 scholarship athletes on football? You got 13 scholarship athletes on basketball. Those are your two money-making sports, if we're being honest. And really, football is the bigger driver of that. And if you're trying to pay 85 athletes, like, at bare minimum, six-figure salaries, you're going to run through a lot of that money pretty quickly. Now, that $25 to $30 million is not all for paying current athletes. Some of that has to go to the past athletes. That's the other tricky part of this. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so what that's going to end up doing, Jesse, and I'll throw this back to you on this to get your thoughts, is that there's no way schools are going to be able to afford to keep all their sports that they already have, like all the Olympic sports that they have. And so what's going to, what I'm curious to see, I mean, is that you're going to actually see the GM position become a thing in college athletics. You know, that was, it's a big thing in pro sports, but you're going to see it become a thing because now you're going to have to manage salary cap, roster manage. The athletic director is going to have to decide like who pays what, because like, what if you have like a uber successful basketball program, let's say like University of Kentucky, but also, but then at the same time have like a mid to mediocre football program. And the football coach is like, well, we could be better if you allow us to use more of this money. And the basketball program is like, we're winning national championships. We need more of the money. So how do you divvy up the pool? Another question, what happens to collectives now? Do you need them? And the thing that you brought up, and I'll throw this to you, is what happens to fans? Because you know that you can imagine that the schools are going to try to, in some ways, pass this cost down. And it's already really expensive to go to games, to buy souvenirs, to invest in the boosters, to be battles in. I know you and me, we're both boosters. We're battles in members. Like, it's, I mean, at what point do we fans just say, we ain't got this kind of money, Jesse?
I know. And the funny thing is, when you mentioned $25 to $30 million a year, like, it sounds like a lot. But, you know, in the context that you mentioned where you're like, you got all these 85 scholarship players and the basketball and the baseball and – keep I mean, that runs out quick when, I mean, fast. For goodness sakes, Florida was going to pay 50% of their budget to one guy, you know, so it wasn't going to work out well there. So, like, again, man, and don't get me wrong, like, I'm all for people getting theirs. Yes. I think that the NIL is crazy, you know, as it is. I got to be honest, I'm not really sure I support going back pay. I mean, that seems a little crazy because it wasn't a thing when you were there. You signed the deal that you went to play football for, but you know, knowing that you have to put these numbers aside, I mean, it's going to be a big dent in the athletic department's budget. And like you said, where does it come from? Now, the schools can afford it because they make a lot of money. But, I mean, again, that's going to reduce. And we know we've seen a shift in college football over the past few years where, like, you know, the facilities are great. You of course, you want to have them if you're one of the premier schools in the country. But you're not going to see, like, the Taj Mahals and stuff like that on college campuses anymore because you put all your money in NIL. Correct. That's where you end up, you know, making your hay there. But like you said, man, where does this work in with the collectives? Where does this who for, you know, all intents and purposes, a lot of these people have already hired a lot of people. Right. You know, they've got offices. And so maybe they let them handle the pay structure and now you can work together. But again, I mean, that's huge for these schools. And, and you know, like we were talking about before the show, this could end up reducing coaching salaries, athletic budgets.
Yes.
And so now you're going to have a decided advantage, not only by these Power Four schools from just a budget perspective, but from this NIL perspective too, if the school can get involved, because, you know, right now, currently they can't do that.
Right.
So, if you have, say, a Big Ten or an SEC school making $40 million, $50 million a year more than an ACC school, well, then you can, I mean, who cares? Like, you can you can throw all the money you want at NIL. But I agree, man. It's just, where does the line stop with asking the fans to fund things?
Right.
And I know I'm going to, might sound like, you know, an old guy yelling at the sky. God, you know, the kids, these, they get off my lawn. Like, I hate to sound like that, but I've always thought it was a strange setup. I mean, like, I get the boosters. You're like, okay, we got, you know, scholarships to pay for. We got facilities to pay for and all these things. But then when NIL come out, it's like the school really did get, I mean, they got the sweet end of the deal.
Oh, yeah, they did.
They get to use all these funds and they don't have to put anything. They legally could not deposit in that bank.
Correct.
And what's crazy to me is, like, again, it's a hard argument to make because a lot of these kids, what they produce as far as brand value for the school. I mean, how much do you think Jameis Winston was worth for Florida State? Now he might have got a couple of checks docked for some misbehavior. I mean,
you know,
but
you know,
other
couple than,
but,
crab you know, legs, you know,
right? You know. You know what I mean? So, like, which is funny because he has an ad with Publix now. So
it does. I know.
The world, we have come full circle in the world.
We have.
But, you know, how much brand value does he generate for the school? It's probably a lot. Now, at the same time, how do you balance a locker room when maybe the second string left tackle, who is just maybe as important, doesn't do the same? And so, you know, I think you're going to have a lot of people who understand that whether you like NIL or not, it's here and you have to be part of it. That's why, you know, we're both in the Battle's End. We're both boosters, like you said. But I mean, you look at a time when the, you know, the economy is difficult and things like that. And the average house, you know, the average worker probably makes, I mean, I hate it, might sound low, but probably somewhere between 30 and 50,000 a year.
Right.
And meanwhile, you're paying a coach $10 million a year, building new facilities, doing all these things. And they're asking you to pay the bill for kids that are out here driving. I mean, what kid do you see on Instagram right now that doesn't, that plays for a Power Four school that ain't driving a Corvette, you know, a Hellcat or something like that?
Right.
Right. Meanwhile, I'm like, I think I can get a couple hundred miles out of them tires. They're almost bald, but it's fine. It ain't supposed to rain this week. We'll be all right. You know, and so it's like, it's just, man, the disconnect is going to happen somewhere. And that's why we've always thought that this NIL structure as it stands, not NIL in itself, because I think it's a good thing for the game. You're giving these kids opportunities and you're, and a lot of them use it for good, but I just think it's unsustainable in its current form from the amount of money and and just from a longevity standpoint. So they're going to have to figure it out. And this is going to be a huge aspect in college athletics going forward, because like you said, this could lead to cutting sports. Yep. And then, you know, with Title IX stuff, you're going to have to cut evenly. You're going to have to offer that same amount of scholarships to women's sports, which are equally as important. They work just as hard.
Yep.
Man, I don't envy the people having to make this decision, but I think, like, as much as we hate what money has done to the sport, it's about to get worse.
It's about to get worse.
And it's never been more important than it is right now. Because again, like we talked about, you think that revenue gap was important before. Imagine you got to start footing the bill for these players. You're going to need all the money you can get. It's an arms race. And that's just point blank.
Absolutely. I was just going to say that. Like, you just, yes, you're so smart. Because you, this is why we love, you know, AD Alford, Michael Alford, you know, if you're out there hearing us, this is why he is like the best AD for us right now, because he saw this before a lot of people else saw this. We got a whole bunch of flack. Everybody was calling us whiny babies and we're terrible for college sport for wanting to do this and all that stuff. No, we were on the right path because we saw what was coming. We saw what, because, you know, and Michael Alford is I think he's on one of those big NCAA committees. I don't remember which one he is, but he's on one of them big ones. And so he saw this coming miles ahead before a lot of other people saw it. And so this is why it's important for Florida State to get out, because think about this. If every school has to save between 25 and 30 million, and so that means that then the conferences are going to set a salary cap of what you can pay, the most you can pay. Well, the SEC and the Big Ten, they're going to have the most money. So, you know, their salary cap is going to be much higher than the Big 12 or the ACC. And so, like, then all these players, they're going to have a higher inducement, NCAA, just telling you, that's what it is now. Let's just go ahead and call a spade, a higher inducement to get the best players to come there, whereas these other conferences are going to just be pillaging over whatever is left over of those kids who don't have the ability to go to these bigger schools. And so Florida State has to get out of the ACC, because it'll be, not only will it have a revenue gap, it'll, now it's going to have a pay gap, a significant gap to not be able to pay the athletes, whatever. The NFL and the NBA, all these pro sport leagues, they don't have to worry about it because they have salary cap and they have collective bargaining. So the so the league and the players have agreed upon the pay structure. Well, now this is one step closer for college athletics to begin moving towards this collective bargaining thing, but it's going to be so different depending on the conference. That's why Florida State has to get out.
No, I agree. And I think you probably will move to a collective bargaining type of structure. And I mean, you hate to say it, but it's going to be NFL light. And you know, I mean, whatever, to me, whatever makes it work, I think it just, it needs to happen, because this is crazy. But, you know, just to put in perspective, the ACC paid out, I just looked it up, they paid out around $39.4 million per school in TV revenue. Of course, you make money outside of TV revenue, so it's not like that's your entire budget. But you just basically lost 90% of your TV money for how this is going to go. And I saw something where I think the Big Ten is projected to pay out like $60.1 million, or they paid out $60 million last year, even more than the SEC. And so, again, man, it's this is why, like, when you saw, and I said this on another show the other day, when you saw at the ACC spring meetings, when Michael Alford had the little conference that he had with the ACC network and whatnot, one of the things that like had came out of that was, this was never about the ACC. This was always about Florida State. This was always about, like you mentioned, having the forethought to see that this is coming down the road, and that you are going to need, like, it's just not going to be sustainable to remain in the ACC. And I know people right. will be like, well, you can win now, so what changes? $50 million changes a lot.
That changes everything.
Right, especially when you get like a $30 million bill thrown in your lap every single Jeez. Year. So it is of the utmost importance right now. But like you said, you feel good about the administration that we have being able
yep.
to guide us through this. You know, and there's been some developments in the lawsuit that we'll have to brush up on and bring you guys yep. another episode. That's but right. you know, it's looking good for Florida State, I think, from what I can read.
Yeah,
it's looking from what I can tell. Yeah. Right. It's looking like we're going to be able to kind of figure this thing out. But I think that's why there's such a sense of urgency. And, yeah. and so I think that's important, man, because it's just, you, like I said, it's a changing aspect and everybody has to keep up together. But like you mentioned with the NFL, the thing is, you know, we've always said this, like, imagine if the NFC East paid $50 million more than Ooh, the NFC South.
Exactly.
Like, that would not be fair. No. You would not be able to manage. It you wouldn't be compete. Competitive. Right. It wouldn't be competitive. And the problem is, like, you have all this stuff that's happening in college football, but there's no commissioner. There's right. no general manager looking out to say, okay, well, they're making more than they are. And, you know, like you look at the playoff money, it's not yep. like with this settlement, they're going to go, okay, well, guess what? Big Ten and SEC, you make the most. You're going to
pay more.
You're going to pay 60% of that. And everybody else is going to pay a little bit less. That's not how it works.
Nah.
And so that, again, that's just another competitive disadvantage you have yep. by remaining in the ACC long-term. So they got to figure this out. But the good thing is, Michael, you know, if you want to figure out where you need to go for FSU gear, I mean, it's pretty much a no-brainer. And that
no-brainer.
Is today's sponsor, Alumni Hall FSU. Check those guys out at 1415 Timber Lane Road in Tallahassee or online at alumnihall.com. Navigate over to the FSU page. They got all kinds of stuff. New hats. They just dropped some new comfort color tees today. They got some, I just shared the other day on our page, some Cutter and I think it's Roebuck. I'm not sure about that. So whatever. It's a nice polo. I know
it's
that.
It's a nice polo.
It's really good quality stuff. So, and the good thing is you can save some money by using code SPEAR when you check out. So that's online or in store. So go check those guys out. They got a lot of really nice stuff. I know coming up before the season, I'm definitely gonna have to stock up on some of the new stuff they got. So we appreciate you guys supporting us or supporting those that support us. That is Alumni Hall FSU. So the next thing, we're going to stay on some football, Michael. The unnamed four-letter network that we are on bad terms with at the moment, they recently put out their post-spring top 25 power rankings. Now, you know, once the spring came and went, it gives you a good idea of kind of what you're working with, teams across the country. You know, you had some, we even said, like, we felt a certain way about this team before. That's we right. feel a certain way after. You get to kind of see things. So you're kind of getting to where things are shaking out more accurately now. We've had the portal session is closed. You kind of understand who everybody's got. Now, power rankings are different. There's a lot that goes into that, recruiting, a lot right. of things. So these aren't like the preseason rankings. But Florida State comes in at 11th. And to be honest, man, I looked at this and you know, of course, we wanted to figure out how we could crap on ESPN. But I think it's pretty fair. So ahead of us, you have Georgia at 1, Ohio State at 2, Texas at 3, Oregon at 4. You know, Oregon has like 9,000 five-star quarterbacks, so I get
exactly.
that. Notre Dame at 5. We were talking before the show. We got a little pushback on that one.
Yeah, for sure.
Ole Miss at 6, Alabama at 7, Missouri at 8, Utah at 9, Michigan at 10, Florida State at 11. I think that's a pretty fair landing spot for us. I mean, when you look at the teams, like the Georgias, the Ohio State, Texas, Oregon, you know, Ole Miss had a really big portal class. Alabama, I mean, I don't see putting them outside of the top 10, but you have a lot of unknown change there in roster and coaching. Obviously, can they replicate without Nick Saban? But, you know, from a neutral perspective, let me take the glasses off just a little bit for just a second here.
Yeah.
Florida State has a lot of talent, okay? They just maybe don't have a lot of the high-end pieces that have been proven at a college level yet. So you have a couple question marks that you want to see play out on the field. Those close to the program, we feel good about what we got.
Yeah.
But there's some things that we need to see. And like, I could see them coming out and beating Georgia Tech by 30 points. I could see them coming out and beating Georgia Tech by 3 points.
Correct.
So we just don't know yet. There's an unknown factor with Florida State. But I think really, and I'm going to talk about this kind of through another vein in a second once we get through the next segment, but I think this speaks to the coaching staff that you have in place and the job that they're going to do and they have done and that they've shown they've been able to do. You're the highest-ranked ACC team. You are the highest-ranked team in the state of Florida. Some interesting ones, rounding out the top 25, Penn State was at 12, NC State at 13. I thought that was a little interesting. I mean, they always are consistently okay in Raleigh. So that may be a little bit high. Then you got LSU, Tennessee, Clemson comes in at 16, Kansas State, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Arizona, Virginia Tech at 21. Virginia Tech's my sleeper team this year. Kansas. Okay. If they can get over the hump, I think they got the pieces to do it. Kansas, Iowa, Miami, all the way down at 24th. Womp womp. Southern California at 25th, and then let me scroll. Let me keep. No, Florida didn't come up. Nope. I'm sorry, guys. I don't know. I scrolled. I didn't see you down there.
Sorry, Florida.
Maybe they came in at 13.85. No, that was a lawsuit that didn't come in for them. Either way, you get the point. But man, I think 11 is relatively fair. For where we're at right now, again, you're the highest ranked ACC team. You're inside the top 12. Now, you know, finishing 11th doesn't mean you're in the top 12 for the playoffs
with
all the automatic qualifiers. But, you know, if you come in at 11th as the highest ranked ACC team and you live up to that billing, you are the favorite to win the ACC. I think you're tied with Clemson. If you win, you're in. So you're in the playoffs. And if you say you don't win, but you only have one loss or, you know, in the ACC championship or whatever, you're still going to be pretty close to that at-large bid, that second at-large bid, because you will get to play Notre Dame, you will get to play Clemson, and you will get to play Miami.
Right.
So you got a couple of chances to prove yourself there, but I think 11's pretty fair coming into the season.
You know, man, I was about to say, yeah, you know, if you're 11-1 and you know, either you lose the ACC championship or you don't get it, but you only got one loss, like, I can't foresee them leaving out a Power 5 school out of the playoffs when you're 11-1 and trying to put over a 9-4, 9-3 SEC team over an 11-1 team. But, you know, I don't trust any of them fools down at the four-letter network or the College Football Playoff Invitational Committee. So, listen, I think you and I agree that them being in the top 15 is fair. I think you and I agree them being somewhere after 5 is fair.
Fair, yep.
I think for me, the two question marks I have being put above them is, one, as we both agreed, Notre Dame. Like, they're literally almost in the same situation in Florida State. They're getting a new quarterback, Riley Leonard, who's been hurt, right?
Right.
You know, most of the season, he was hurt. Like, so you don't really know what he does against primetime competition, even though he played okay.
And as a thrower of the football, he's not any better than DJU.
No.
I mean, he's a good scrambler, but he's never been a great thrower of the ball.
No. Defensively, I mean, they were all right last year. They were all right. Like, they weren't like elite. They weren't Florida State elite, but they were all right. They were good. Like, so I'm curious as to why Notre Dame gets the nod on the power rankings. If it's more so with recruiting and all like that stuff, okay, maybe. I also think, and this one always irks me, you know, I think you can make a case for Missouri being at 8, and we talked about this in the pre-show, Missouri's been coming on. They've been recruiting like crazy. Every year you've seen them steady grow. They are the one team outside of Alabama who actually beat them, but they also were the one team besides Auburn, which was maybe a fluke, I guess, looking back now, that gave Georgia a serious run for their money. They could have won the game, honestly. Yeah. So I'm okay with Missouri being at 8. The one program that I am definitely not sure being above Florida State is Utah. Every dadgum year, Jesse, we have this love affair. Not me, but the country, especially this four-letter network, has a love affair with Utah, only for them to be successful early in the year and then flame out at the end of the year. Every year. There is no way. I would bet whatever my next payroll is that you would put Florida State and Utah on a field right now, and Florida State, in my mind, would be a 14-point favorite. In my mind. Okay?
Yeah.
I just do not think Utah is this good. Yes, they beat Florida last year, but we all saw that Florida was cheeks last year. So, like, that doesn't count to me. I'm sorry.
Right, exactly. I mean, they did beat him with a pig farmer at quarterback. So,
let's
make sure to rub all the salt on the wound there. But it was pretty close even. And it was at home. And so, like, you look at Florida State went into the swamp with another quarterback who had to start his first game.
Correct.
You know, and still went in there and won 2, whereas you didn't get him at home in the first game of the season. So, I agree, man. I think the two that I would have a problem with is the same as you. Maybe even 3, man. I know Michigan is coming off a national championship.
Yeah.
You have to replace a lot of good pieces, a lot of talented pieces, and you have a new coach. Now, I know he did good in the interim role, which is, man, there's a lot of pressure on Ohio State this year and Ryan Day to finally actually do something. But you know, again, man, I mean, Texas is loaded as a roster, but, you know, they continue to not do anything. And then, you know, Notre Dame, again, is the one that, that, like you said, I kind of have an issue with it because Notre Dame, I feel like it's just the old heads that give them a lot of credit for what they were. Exactly. For, you know, it's like a love affair with an old, you know, old girlfriend or something that, like, you just can't break it off.
Yeah.
It's like the only thing they have done in the last two decades or whatever is like get pantsed on national TV when they made you finally let them in the playoffs. So,
yes,
you know, I mean, they, it's like they're, that was the whole Manti Te'o thing.
Yeah.
And like,
man, oh, yeah, the fake girlfriend.
They
oh
disappeared faster than the girlfriends in the playoffs. So, like, it's, I mean, it's just, I don't see number five. That seems a bit high. And so, but at the same time, I feel like the reason I think I like 11 is it's one of those where it keeps you humble a little bit, you know, where you're like, okay, well, we still got to go out there and earn it.
I can
see not
that.
Being handed like a top five ranking for what we did last year. You have to go out and earn it, but it is also you're starting high enough. And I understand that preseason rankings don't mean squat because they're usually crap. They usually are very inaccurate and they don't hold up the test of time, which is actually, you know, for, as much as we don't like the CFP committee, I like that they wait to put them out. Now, again, with all the automatic qualifiers and stuff like that, the committee's not really as important anymore. And so the automatic qualifiers may take some of the need for to, you know, a high ranking out of it if you get that automatic qualifier bid. But I do think there is something to starting early, to not having to climb as high in the rankings, you know, and say, because, I mean, let's be honest, if you start at 10 or you start at 30 and you sustain a loss, you're probably got a better chance of still getting in if you started at 10 than 30. It just... it is what it is. So I think it's good. I think the regular season rankings, you're probably going to come in about the same place, somewhere between around 8 and 15 is probably where you're going to come in. And I think that's fair because, again, the thing that worries me the most is that you don't have a really strong schedule this year.
Yeah.
But you do get that Notre Dame game. You do get that Clemson game.
That's
you
right.
do get the Miami game. But you need them to hold up their end of the bargain. You can't if they suck this year, your schedule is flat, man. It's going to be tough.
Yeah.
And so moving on from that, the other thing that I was going to tie this into, which is what I was talking about with the coaching staff at Florida State, is On3 recently just released their top 100 players for 2024. And I was a little bit surprised, man. Only one Florida State player made it on the list, and that was Pat Payton all the way down at 66. Now, Florida State had five players to make the list last year, three in the top 50 alone, and that didn't even count Keon Coleman.
Yeah.
So, because when they dropped the list, he wasn't with Florida State. And so, like, even Malik Benson made the list last year, but was not on the list this year. And I know a lot of people are going to be like, okay, well, you know, Florida State, you don't deserve to have all the players on the list. That's fair, man. But when you got offensive tackles from, like, Jacksonville State on there or something like that, or I think Miami and North Carolina had four people both on the list, and Florida State only has one, like, no Malik Benson, no Azaria Thomas. You can't tell me Azaria Thomas is not one of the best 100 players in college football.
Correct.
And so, aside from that, the issues that I have with the list, because I think you deserve to have more than one. Daryl Jackson probably deserves to be somewhere in there. I think the reason this speaks to this coaching staff and what they are able to do with what they have is when you use that UNC and Miami example. So, again, both of those have four players on the list, three more than Florida State. You had a more that I was kind of surprised by UNC, to be honest, but they had a higher 247 talent composite ranking than Florida State last year. So you have from last year going forward, a more talented roster going into this year. Now you have to recalculate the blue chip ratios. Florida State is probably past UNC, but you also have them with more players on this top 100 list. So it speaks to, you know, okay, well, technically you should think UNC and Miami have some better dudes, right? Florida State is still has much better favor or a much better odds to win the ACC. They're ranked in the power polls where Miami's down to 24th. UNC's not even in the question mark. They had a better season last year with a less talented on paper roster than both of these teams had. Yeah. So to me, it's like, how can you have Florida State? How can one service? And I know everybody's individual, and this is like probably one guy's opinion, but how can you have Florida State as the favorite to win the ACC, but have way less talented guys in the top 100 players? So again, man, it's interesting, but I think that speaks to the job that this coaching staff does, that you are more confident in the results that they're going to get than you are in the pieces that they have to get there, because you know he can take, you know, he can take that roster and put together a 13-0 year until you run into the bowl and you don't have half that roster. I'm so tired of talking. I can't wait till 10 years from now. We can just stop talking about that. Stop pouching it. But I think that's interesting, man. Only one guy at number 66 when you had so many last year. But again, you are projected to do better than the teams that have more than you. So it just speaks, I think, to the job Mike Norvell and the staff has done at Florida State.
Listen, the word is develop, right? It's develop. Right. It's that the fact that if you come to Florida State, you know that you're going to be developed, whether you're on a top 100 player list or not, whether you were a diamond in a rough at New Albany or you were, you know, buried on the depth chart at Georgia, or you were basically almost out of football because you just couldn't throw that, no one thought you could throw the ball, or whether you were at Arizona State and you had maybe 250 yards to your name. Like, I mean, or you had two knee surgeries and pretty much people just, you know, written you off. Like, you're going to come to the Florida State and you're going to get developed. And Mike Norvell and that staff is going to pull out all that potential in you. Now, I think we did an episode a while back where we looked at the boomer bust rate. And I think, if I remember correctly, Florida State has like a 95% boom rate.
Yeah, it was
rate.
Up there, yeah.
Yeah, it was way up there with the transfer portal, with players in general. And so, you know, is it asinine that we only have one player on the top 100 list? Yes. But I do want to do something alongside of this and the whole top 25 power ranking. And if you allow me, Jesse, just for a quick sec to put on my conspiracy hat, you know, I like to put this one on. Okay. If you go back to that top 25 power ranking list, if you look at this list of top 100 players, I bet you my next payroll that the majority of the top is SEC or Big Ten players. Mm-hmm. Because 8 of the top 10 power ranking schools are SEC, Big Ten. Okay. I'm just saying, and I know, I think the top 100 came from 247 Sports, right?
On three.
So I don't assume they have a bias, but I assume there are a lot of people who come from that space who are looking at those two conferences because these are the conferences. These are the things. Yeah. These are the things that is in everybody's head. This is what everything is being measured to. The SEC, the Big Ten. The Big Ten, the SEC. And everybody else is second after that, at second rate after that. And so I just wonder that as Florida State is building this dynasty or building this elite program again. I mean, we have 2 years of, well, technically we have 2.5 years. If you go back to after 0-4 went 5-3, you could see the building structure there of over and over again. Florida State is proving that again, it's a blue blood. It belongs in the elite conversation of college football programs. And yet year after year, it gets disrespected. And I just say, keep disrespecting us. Just keep doing it. Because over and over again, it's been proven that Florida State, because of where it's located, because of the history and the pageantry of what it's been, it will always rise up and punch you in the face. Just keep disrespecting us. Just keep doing it. That's all I got to say.
No, I agree. And if I'm Norvell, I'd probably hang that list on the locker room wall just to show that, hey, you guys aren't any of the top, you know, one guy in the top 100. And I would be willing to bet that at the end of the season, when you revisit this, I think you got some guys that are going to probably should have been in the top 100 list. But man, like you said, it's almost like we get treated the opposite of Notre Dame. And I'm not here to cry about, you know, poor Florida State, this, that, or the other. Because you got to go out and earn it. But that's, I think this is, you know, this is maybe another one of them where, like Mike Norvell said, this team doesn't need any extra motivation. Right. I mean, it doesn't hurt.
It's under their dorm room door.
It doesn't hurt either. You know, I might tag everyone in like a group message on, hey, by the way, none of you bums made the top 100 list.
Not that you need a motivation or anything.
Exactly. Right.
And I will say this, Jesse. I will acknowledge that the fact that I think you're right. You said this earlier, is that probably some of the reason why we only have one player is because a lot of what we are projecting as to be key players of the season, they haven't put it on paper yet. They don't have the production yet. And so it is hard to say, well, this player is a top 100 player when we actually haven't seen it. Now, the talent ranking, the skill set, all that stuff, yes, we can postulate that, but until it gets put on paper. So I will give them credit to say, yes, it's kind of hard to rank our players when we haven't actually seen it produced on the field.
Right. And I wholeheartedly agree with that, because that's kind of what we talked about with the top 25, where we're like, look, you just got a lot of pieces that we think Marvin Jones is going to be one of the 50 best players in college football, but we haven't seen it yet. So we still have to see that. Now, if you want to talk a little bit about conspiracies, I would say, like, what's the over under on the amount of players that you have on this list versus the amount of losses that you have? Because Miami, you know, yeah. I'm gonna probably take, you got four players. I think you might have more than four losses. So we'll see. So it doesn't necessarily mean too much there. But with that being said, Michael, let's transition into some baseball.
Okay.
Got some stuff to talk about here. First off, I want to obviously congratulate them on winning game one of the ACC tournament against Georgia Tech. Man, that bullpen is still a little bit unreliable. Shaky. We actually saw him bring in Jamie Arnold as a closer in the ninth because that lead was starting to slip. And you know, it's funny, man. I don't know about you guys at home or watching this. You know, drop in the comments if you're watching on YouTube if you're this way or not. I'm so weird about Florida State athletics in general. I turn it on, right, because I work at night. And so I woke up when the game was already underway. And I woke up, I checked the score, and it's like 8-1 or 9-1. And I'm like, oh, heck yes. So let me turn this on and watch it. They had a four-run inning. I'm like, all right, let's turn this off. I turn it back on. They hit a home run. I turn it back off. And I'm I would literally change my shirt 15 times during the game. I'm doing my part. Y'all better do your part. So it's cool to see that they got that. They will face UVA next.
Yep.
But, man, that bullpen, when you think about them – getting to host a regional and advancing past that, because some of the teams that I've seen so far were like Florida A&M in your regional, maybe I think even Miami or something like that. I feel like you could probably get past them as is, but man, if you're going to get to a super regional, you really need Cam Leiter to be able to get back in this rotation. I don't think you really worry about the ACC tournament if that's, you know, I don't think that's a focus. I think you just kind of let that play out as it does. But, man, if you're having to bring in Jamie Arnold as a closer, it looks like Connor Whitaker is still on a pitch count because he only did, I think, two innings the other day against Georgia Tech. So it's like, I don't know the status on Cam Leiter. I'll have to do some digging on that. It didn't sound positive, the last update that they gave. But, man, if you don't get him back for the regional or the super regional at least, you might be in trouble. But you're going to have these bats come to play. And that they did against Georgia Tech. I mean, they scored 12 runs. But it is exciting, again, to see them. They hit 40 wins for the first time since 2019, and they're not done yet. And this is a program, again, that's where Mike Martin became legendary, 40-plus games in over 40 years. That's so it's nice to see them get back to that. There's a really, really good chance they're going to host a regional for the first time since 2018. So, you know, this season has still been a success. You just want to see them put some hardware, you know, in the trophy case to make it mean something. Now, of course, it will mean something in momentum and recruiting and all that stuff, and proof of concept would link, just like we saw with Mike Norvell. But you want to see them at least get that regional win, at least make it to a super regional. You have all this talent and all the success. You don't want it to just kind of fizzle out at the end of the season.
That's right. Yeah. You know, I was thinking about this the other night, actually. And the thing I was thinking about was, you remember Talladega Nights, which is one of my favorite Will Ferrell movies of all time.
Yeah.
At the end where they're like racing, the cars blow up, whatever, and they're just running on the track. Yeah. You know, they're trying to finish the race. That kind of in some ways feels like Florida State baseball. Like
that's our
bullpen, right? The car's blown up, the wheels are everywhere, half our suit is hanging off. We're injured. Our bullpen is still, you know, all over the place. You cannot trust them from game to game. You just don't know what you're gonna get. And it's almost like, man, this amazing season after some down seasons that we've experienced, it feels like we're just limping through to the final. Like we're just kind of like barely getting there. And you just feel so bad because, like you said, man, 40 wins, first time since 2019. We're getting back to the standard of what is Florida State baseball. I mean, we're in the top. I think I just looked at RPI the other day and we're a top eight right now in the baseball, whatever RPI, which would allow us to host a region as a top eight seed, a national seed. And so it'd be so awesome just to see these guys like be rewarded for the hard work and energy and effort they put into the season to get it back to the standard. But he also, again, I have Will Ferrell running down with half of his bodysuit on fire, just thinking, man, these guys are just, they're barely getting in there. And again, I heard it was day to day as well too with the pitcher there. And so
Who
knows, man? I don't know.
Really, the thing is, it's just unfortunate because last year they were terrible. It is what it is. They won 23 freaking games. But pitching injuries contributed a lot to that. Yep. And so now, again, this year, you're dealing with it again. And it's like, it also happened to be Jamie Arnold is your ace, clearly. Yeah. But it also happened to be your number two pitcher, one of your most electric guys, like the one guy you really could not have afforded to lose.
Correct.
Because it's not that the bullpen is bad. It's not that they're bad. It's not that they don't have good arms. It's not that Jamie Arnold isn't electric at
right.
And Whitaker isn't a great relief pitcher in the role that he's playing. But when you get to playing these really good teams, pitching is what wins and loses the game.
Correct.
And so at this point, man, if you are down, if you only have really one of your aces, and I mean, even if they could get him back in a limited on a pitch count and treat him almost like Connor Whitaker, imagine how dangerous that would be if you could put Jamie Arnold on the hump to start with, then you bring in Leiter, then you bring in Whitaker, and one game, because two of them are on a pitch count, you're guaranteed pretty much to win one game.
At least one.
You're just going to be digging after that, so it's going to be tough. But you're going to need this offense to show up. But at the same time, again, man, I'm just proud of what these guys have been able to do. It's just unfortunate that they're having to deal with this injury right now to such an important player. But I also want to take a time to give them a shout out, because speaking of bringing home hardware, they did bring home some hardware so far. So first off, James Tibbs, who has been a Mr. Tibbs, as he's affectionately known by FSU baseball fans, an absolute beast at the plate. Yeah. One of the best hitters in college baseball. Link Jarrett has repeatedly said that this is one of the best hitters he's ever coached. Does bring home ACC Player of the Year as well as first team all ACC honors.
Absolutely. Congrats, man.
Right. So shout out to him, man. Best player in the ACC. Like, you just love to see that. And then also Jamie Arnold, the guy that we just talked about, Florida State's ace, brings home first team all ACC honors as well. Cam Smith was second team all ACC. I'm going to be a little honest here. I find it hard to believe that he's second team. I thought he was, he's played like a first team all ACC player. But again, I mean, your second team all ACC, he's had a monster season. I mean, these guys are going to go high in the draft. That is for sure. Third team, Jaime Ferrer and Marco Dinges also brought home some hardware there. So congratulations to all of those guys for their postseason awards, man. They deserve it. They worked hard. And whether or not they go on to make it to Omaha or things like that, the hard work that they put in for this team is just like we saw with Florida State. Football. That groundwork is going to pay dividends going forward. That's going to allow them to say, hey, look, we took some of these guys in from the portal and they weren't at big schools and we made them what they were. And so that's going to pay dividends going forward. Now, the other round ball sport to touch on is Florida State softball.
Yeah.
Love you guys. I love the softball team. Lonnie, love you guys. Congratulations. Yes. They won their regional. They beat Chattanooga. They turned around, beat UCF. And then they beat Auburn to make it out of that regional. Michael, you ever seen Superman like standing in front of the thing trying to stop the train? Well, like, what if the train was made of kryptonite?
Yes.
I mean, they're in a super regional, so kudos to them. Like we were talking before the show, I think it really speaks to the standard that this program has when a quote unquote down year for you ends up in a super regional.
Exactly.
The reason I'd make the freight train reference is, first off, you have to play Oklahoma. And like I was explaining to my wife earlier about how she was asking if we played, if I wanted to turn it on. I said, maybe. I was like, Oklahoma softball. I'm like, imagine if Georgia and Alabama had a baby with the New England Patriots when they had Tom Brady. Oh, that's Oklahoma softball.
That's a great picture.
Like they great are picture. A dynasty. And then it comes out today that McKenna Reed is still day-to-day as far as pitching. And your senior leader, who's been a little inconsistent this season, but she's been a veteran presence, Allison Royalty, is out for the season with injury, which is super unfortunate because her career has consistently been cut short due to injury. So I hate to see that too. So obviously we hope she heals up well. She said she's going to be in the dugout, be there for the team. Man, I don't put anything past Lonnie Alameda. I'm not going to sit here and, you know, they got some really talented freshmen on this team. You got, you know, Ashton Danley in the circle who's really progressed over the season. They have a great offense. It's going to be a tough task to beat this Oklahoma team, but I'm not going to put anything past them. It only takes getting hot for, you know, just a couple of games and you can make it out of there. But man, I mean, congratulations to making it on the super regional, but man, it's going to be a tough task to beat Oklahoma.
Yeah. I mean, congratulations.
Down two pitchers, potentially down two pitchers.
Yeah. First of all, congratulations to FSU softball. Congratulations to Coach, as they say. Man, incredible, especially the way the season started, to get them back on track, to go on that long winning streak, you know, go through a little bit of struggle and then get in there and then, you know, win three straight games in your regional. I mean, Jesse, don't you think Auburn is sick of Florida State?
Right. I know. They're
so sick of us. Every time they're up for a championship, Florida State's in their way for the most part.
Just dream killers.
I love it. I love it. I was watching Auburn fans commenting on social media as I was watching the game, too. And they're just like, I am so sick of Florida State. I was like, yes, yes, be sick of us. Thank you.
I understand.
I understand. It's okay. But, yeah, I mean, you know, and then the other thing I'll say this is this. You know, Jesse, it's like the old saying, what goes up must come down at some point, right? So if there's any year, you know, Oklahoma was only, you know, they weren't even the top overall seed this year. They're the second seed overall. So that also, that means that they can be and they can be beaten. So maybe this is the year. Maybe with two pitchers down and two of your senior leaders down and an inconsistent bullpen and sometimes the bats just going eerily silent for one of the best offenses in college softball. Maybe the planets align and we just do it. We just win two or three. I think if Florida State is going to do it, it's going to go all three games. If Florida State to pull this out, it's going to have to go all three. Cause you know, Oklahoma's going to get one. The goal is to get one. That's all they got to get is one and put that pressure on Oklahoma to then have to win two back to back. That's why I think game one is so important for this softball team. If they can get game one, now you put the pressure on Oklahoma to have to win two back-to-back games, right? Which we know they can do it, but, man, I just think it just changes the game if they can get one. So, but like you said, it tells you the standard of the program when we're like, a super regional.
Yeah, but I think you make a good point. And you said this to me before the show that when things started a little bit rocky, you know, they lost to Charlotte to start out and they lost to some of the better ranked teams. And so did you think a super regional was probably going to happen this year?
Right.
A lot of us really didn't think that. And so I think, again, it's like if you're in I mean, from the talent that the young talent that they brought in and the veteran talent that they lost.
Yep.
You could almost consider this a rebuilding year from a sense. And so the fact that you still made a super regional, and again, like you said, man, they could go in there and win that first game, and that's a shot across the bow. Like,
yes,
imagine the look on Oklahoma fans' faces if they went in there and lost the first game to Florida State. Like, that would be, you'd be like, I mean, what happened? But again, like you said, man, if it was ever going to happen, it's probably going to be the most improbable year ever. And, you know, hey, I mean, we went on the road and beat Florida without a quarterback and then won the ACC championship without a quarterback. So, you know, don't tell me what teams can't do.
Also, let's remember a couple. Wasn't it Mike Martin's last season when they should not have gone to the College World Series?
Right. Yep.
And they beat Georgia. Improbable
and LSU
run.
Man, that was one of the most amazing baseball postseason series I've ever seen. To go in and beat Georgia and to beat LSU and then to get a game against Arkansas out in Omaha, man. The thing is, when you have it, this is just like we talked about with the football team. When you have a coach like Lonnie Alameda,
that's right,
you just never know what can happen. I mean, all it takes is the bats to get hot and you just might have to win, you know, a high scoring game. It is what that's it is. But of course it's going to be a tall task, but they're not scared of the challenge. They know what's ahead of it. And this is a team that, you know, they bring that swagger into this game, just like Oklahoma does. So we're just going to wish them the best of luck going forward in this super regional. And then of course, you know, Florida State, the rest of the ACC tournament, hopefully they can bring home some hardware, but man, I'm just, you know, that's pretty much going to be it for us today. We just kind of wanted to touch on a little bit of everything. We got a couple more things that, because we're running a little long, we'll save for the next show. But we do appreciate you guys joining us. As always, make sure to check out Alumni Hall FSU to load up on some FSU gear. Use code SPEAR to get 10% off. As always, we appreciate you guys supporting those that support us. Drop a like and subscribe if you've listened this long. Also, people, PSA, live a good life. Have fun.
Yes.
Don't take stuff so seriously. I posted a little joke thing on social media earlier where some South Carolina writer, or I don't even know if they write for South Carolina. I really don't know who it is. They wrote an article saying that Mike Norvell is going to be the Gamecocks coach in 2025. And I'm like, first off, tell the farm team to simmer down a little bit over there. Okay. We'll let you know what players you need. Exactly. Don't act like you're about to get our coach. People just got all bent out of shape thinking that we came up with this. It's a joke. Nah, laugh. Enjoy joke, life. Guys. Have fun. So just have fun with that. But I just want to touch on that. But anyway, guys, thank you so much for tuning in. We will catch you guys on the next one. And as always, go Noles.
Go Noles.